You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Have you always wanted to hear the hockey stories told from the press box? For your premier source of hockey prospect news from across the AHL, NCAA, Canadian Hockey League, and international leagues, this is your all-access pass to The Press Zone, a hockey podcast packed with news, analysis, interviews, and entertainment featured on AHLReport.com. Your hosts, Amy Johnson and Rick Stevens, are experienced, credentialed hockey reporters bringing you stories built from strong connections throughout the hockey community and from inside rinks all across North America. Welcome to The Press Zone. Well, hey there, Flyers fans. Welcome to this week's episode of The Press Zone Philadelphia, right here on the AHL Report and Rocket Sports Media. We are a proud affiliate of the Hockey Podcast Network, and a big thanks to our sponsor, DraftKings. You'll hear a message from them with a special offer for new users a little later in the show. But first, let me make some introductions. My name is Amy Johnson. I'm your host and the lead correspondent here at the AHL Report. And I'm joined each and every week by my tremendous co-host. He's the one who makes it all happen here at Rocket Sports Media, our founder and editor-in-chief, and he is the one and only Rick Stevens.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
I was waiting for that. I'm fine, thanks.
You know.
I didn't want to jump in and cut you off there.
Keep you on your toes a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Did you enjoy the Eagles win on Sunday?
Funny you ask. Not an Eagles fan, so to say, but maybe I will be this season because my fantasy football team, at least one of them, includes more Eagles than usual. I got a bit of Jalen Hurts. Ooh. I got Dallas Goedert. I got nice. Miles Sanders.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe I'll be Jalen Reagor as well. I'll be keeping a closer eye on the Eagles this NFL season.
I managed to snag Devontae Smith in two of my leagues, so I'm quite happy about that. Birds were looking good on Sunday. Everybody, nope. Atlanta. Matty Ice is going to come in, and they're just going to take the Eagles and sweep them right. Nope. Opposite happened. It was a beautiful sight. Beautiful sight.
Yeah, my picks pool, I made the mistake of not picking the Eagles this week.
Oh, shame on you.
Yeah.
Shame on you. Fly, Eagles, fly. Mm. We have a great show for you coming up here today. We're going to talk a little trash. We are going to talk some trash on the show today. No, I don't mean chirping, even though I probably could chirp. Notice I refrained from
family
chirping your
friendly podcast.
It is. I'm not going to chirp you or your Vikings. I'm not going to do it. We're going to talk more about the Danbury Trashers is what we're going to do today. If you are a hockey fan, you are probably familiar with the new Netflix documentary called Untold, Crime and Penalties. It's the story of the now defunct UHL team, the Danbury Trashers. Fascinating story. And we've got someone joining us today who was on that documentary, who was part of the team. And Rick, it's going to be pretty fun.
I think it's going to be great.
It's going to be very good. But first, before we get there, we have to talk about the Philadelphia Flyers a little bit. So we're going to talk a bit about another Hall of Fame name that's come up, Flyers related. We're going to talk about how the fans, that's right, you the fans, are going to get to choose the next goal song. Feel the Shake ain't coming back, apparently. We're going to talk a bit about that, talk a little bit about rookie camp, which is starting this week down there in Voorhees. And then, yes, in our second segment, we've got some AHL news and so forth. But then we are very excited. None other than Phil Jubileo will be joining us. He was the only play-by-play broadcaster ever to
have that role for the Danbury Trashers. He was featured in the Netflix documentary, and he will be on the show with Rick and I today to talk about what it was like working for Jimmy and AJ Galante and all of the rest of the shenanigans that were going on there with the Danbury Trashers, and what it was like making the Netflix documentary as well. Rick, it's going to be a lot of fun there in the second segment.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells some stories that you don't hear on the show either.
No, these are the untold stories.
This is the untold. The untold stories. But first, let's kick things off with a little talk about the Philadelphia Flyers. And we mentioned on a recent episode, of course, that this year the Flyers have announced that they will be inducting a new class of Flyers Hall of Fame members, one or more. The voting committee, the selection committee, is now currently, of course, going through that voting process. One of those gentlemen who is a potential candidate and finalist to be inducted into the Flyers Hall of Fame was now just announced this week as one of the United States Hockey Hall of Fame class of 2021 members, Rick, and that is one Paul Holmgren.
Paul Holmgren, deserving of consideration for the Flyers Hall of Fame, obviously, but has been notified that he'll be part of the United States Hockey Hall of Fame in their class of 2021.
Absolutely. You know, he grew up in Minnesota, and he even says that, quote, you know, reflecting back as far back as I can remember, United States hockey is a program that I've looked up to and always strive to be a part of. I'm incredibly proud to have had the fortune to wear and represent the red, white, and blue during each and every occasion I've been asked. And he also then went on to extend congratulations to the two other inductees of the class. And so congratulations to Paul Holmgren. Certainly is a big accomplishment for him to be getting inducted into USA Hockey's Hall of Fame. And might not be the only one that he gets inducted into this year, but that one for sure. So congratulations to Homer.
And entering with Boston Bruin Peter McNabb, as well as hockey writer Stan Fischler.
Very well deserved all around. It's a great Hall of Fame class. Now, when it comes to memorable moments, Flyers fans are, most hockey fans are pretty loyal to their team's goal song. And the Flyers have had some pretty prominent ones and memorable ones in recent years. Feel the Shake, the most recent. I think fans are a little 50-50 on Feel the Shake. Well, it's not coming back, Rick. And in fact, the Flyers aren't even going to announce that they have selected a new goal song. Nope. They're letting fans do it. It's pretty fun.
I think so. And I noticed it was newly arrived, number 89, Cam Atkinson, who seems to be getting involved a lot this summer, made the announcement on YouTube of the contest, inviting fans to submit their entries.
That's right. So there is a link at the Flyers website. You get to go. You can enter the name of the song and artist that you feel is worthy of being the next Flyers goal song. Yes, all of you who have already said on Twitter that it should be the Action News theme song, I hear you. I don't think it's going to happen, but I hear you. You can also, apparently, there's a place for the ability for fans to upload music files with an original composition. If you are so talented that you are a composer or musician and you write a new goal song, you can upload that for consideration.
Come on, compose your own. This sounds great.
Well, I would love to hear what Flyers fans come up with for some serious musicians. I mean, Philly has such a very strong music history and background. Philadelphia soul. I mean, all of it. There's some really heavy rock influence. There's very heavy hip hop influence, soul and R&B. I mean, Philly is a music hotbed, and I would bet that there are some fans out there that could come up with some really great compositions for a goal song.
And if you're doing some Philly soul, send it to us too. We'd love to have it as our theme song.
Rick is a really big Philly soul fan. That's if he may not cheer for the Eagles, he may not cheer for well, he might cheer for the Phillies occasionally, but he might not cheer for the Eagles. But he's a big Philly Soul fan. Mm-hmm. So yes, I would love to see what Original Compositions fans come up with. You have until next Thursday, September 23rd, to get your nominations or submissions in. And then what's going to happen is the Flyers are going to review all of those submissions. And then as they get close to opening night on the regular season, they're going to whittle it down to a list of finalists and then put those finalists out publicly for fans to vote on once again. So they're really, Rick, they're really putting this in the hands of fans and saying, you know, we want you to tell us. In fact, Valerie Camillo, who's the president of the team, said, "This team belongs to our fans, so we want them to help us pick which song plays every time the Flyers score here at home." And I think that's pretty fun.
It'll be great to see. Yeah, absolutely great to see.
Very, very fun. You know, that it's getting very close, as we said. Voorhees, after the brief development camp that took place at the end of August, Voorhees, the skate zone ice has been busy. Allegedly, most of the team is already in the area. We've seen the Flyers and Zach Hill and so forth sending out pictures of Giroux and Atkinson and Lawton and Kadahat and Oscar Lindblom and Konechny and all sorts of guys already taking the ice. But Rick, rookie camp actually begins this Thursday. There will be a home and home Saturday and Sunday against the New York Rangers prospects and rookies. Those games are not open to fans. However, it looks like fans may be able to come into the skate zone during actual training camp. But Fletcher said today that they're still finalizing what the protocols are going to be, safety guidelines and so forth for that. So very exciting. Rookie camp's happening this week. And you know, you handed me the roster right before the show. There's some very familiar names on there. It looks like it's a really good crop of young prospects that we're going to see.
For sure. And the names that you expect to see should be there. Morgan Frost and Tyson Forrester, Tanner Lozinski.
Wade Allison.
For sure. It's always good to see the crop of rookies. And there will be as well some invited amateur tryout folks. The one that sticks out to me is Jackson Vanderleest. He's a 20-year-old, played with the Calgary Hitmen last year in the WHL. 6'6", 225-pound defenseman.
235, even.
All right, then.
235-pound defenseman.
Sorry, I was looking at his Elite Prospects listing, which is 225. Since then, he's up 10
apparently
pounds.
Apparently, he's up 10 pounds, yeah, according to the Flyers. So, we'll see. That's a big boy.
Yeah.
That's a big boy on the back end. We'll see how he does.
Let's see Isaac Radcliffe and him meet in front of the net.
It would be, yeah.
266 guys.
Imagine a pairing of those two together. That would be a bit formidable. Very exciting. Rookie camp is getting started. Of course, then training camp starts a week later, next Thursday, the 23rd. So we are getting close, we'll be sure to have all the updates for you as the week continues. It's a very exciting time for sure. We are going to take a quick break, but on the other side, you don't want to miss this interview. The Danbury Trashers, the voice of the Danbury Trashers, Phil Jubileo, the play-by-play broadcaster, joins us right after this.
Week one may be over, but the season's just getting started at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. To kick off week two, DraftKings is giving new customers $200 in free bets instantly when they bet $1 on any football game. Listen up, because you don't want to miss this. Head to the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and place a bet of $1 on any week two game to receive $200 in free bets instantly. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, DraftKings still has huge cash prizes up for grabs all season long with their daily fantasy contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN to receive $200 in free bets when you place a $1 bet on any football game. That's promo code THPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. And welcome back to the Press Zone right here on the AHL Report and Rocket Sports Media. Once again, I'm your host, Amy Johnson, joined by my co-host, Rick Stevens. And hey, are you following this podcast on Twitter? If you're not, shame on you. Go do it right now. It's at the Press Zone. And of course, be sure you're following at the AHL Report for all of your latest AHL news, prospect news. That's the place you want to go. So be sure you're following at the AHL Report or at the Press Zone. And Rick, we really don't want people to miss a single episode of the Press Zone, whether they like to listen to the Press Zone, the Montreal edition, or the Press Zone Philadelphia edition, or both. We don't want them to miss a single episode. So what's the best way for them to make sure that they don't?
Players are getting ready for the season. We're getting ready for the season. You must get ready for the season. That's by subscribing right to this podcast. Subscribe in your favorite podcast platform, whatever you're listening to this on. Hit the subscribe button. Maybe you're listening in our own player. There's a subscribe button in that too. A little preview. You're going to get a brand new upgraded player by the time the new season starts. Yeah. Just a tease.
Fancy schmancy.
But go ahead and subscribe anyway, right now, while you have a chance. Pause us, subscribe, come back, and listen to the rest of the podcast.
Absolutely. You mentioned we're getting ready for the season here. I want to just, first and foremost, now that we're in kind of our AHL report section of the show, I want to give a very warm welcome to three, not one, not two, but three more additional Rocket Sports Media team members who have just been welcomed into the fold this week. That is Cole and Michael and Maria. They'll be helping us out at All Habs Hockey Magazine. They'll be helping us out at the AHL Report. They'll be helping us out on the podcasts, both here at the Press Zone and over at Canadians Connection. Rick, it's pretty exciting. That makes it, including Patrick Williams, we've got so far a fantastic four-person 2021 draft class.
Absolutely. And we've, with respect to the Press Zone and with respect to AHL Report, we've really beefed up our complement in adding three of those people, Michael, Maria, and Patrick. So you're going to get an awful lot of coverage, and you don't want to miss any of it. So make sure you bookmark AHL Report, AHLReport.com, and as we said before, subscribe to the Press Zone podcast.
Absolutely. So, if you've been thinking maybe I should, you know, put an application in to join the team, there is still time to do that. You could join Patrick and Cole and Michael and Maria in our Rocket Sports 2021 fall draft class. The opportunity is still there, but time is running out. So stay tuned. At the end of this segment, we will give you all the information on how you can do that if you're interested in contributing to either All Habs Hockey Magazine or one of our podcasts or the AHL Report. Well, Rick, I have to say the guests that we have here on the Press Zone are always special. They always have great stories to tell, but I think today's guest is going to take the cake as far as just a fascinating story, and I'm just very excited to be able to welcome to the show Phil Jubileo, the former broadcaster, play-by-play broadcaster for the Danbury Trashers, featured in the new Netflix docuseries Untold: Crime and Penalties. Phil, thanks so much for being here with us today.
Amy and Rick, thank you so much for having me.
So I guess, you know,
first and foremost, whether folks have seen the documentary or not on Netflix, if you haven't, what are you waiting for? You need to go watch this if you're a hockey fan at any level. But first and foremost, was working for the Danbury Trashers as jaw-dropping as watching the documentary was?
In some ways, even more jaw-dropping. It was such an amazing experience that the story, it gives you a real flavor and a sense for what the franchise was all about, kind of what went on during those two seasons. Having been around professional sports, minor league, and you know, otherwise for so many years, it's been an experience unlike any other. It's not to say that there weren't, you know, many days that were normal for someone working in sports. Indeed, there were many normal days where it didn't feel any different, but it was just, there were things that would happen and it seemed like on at least a weekly basis that would just make you wonder and be like, this isn't happening anywhere else in the world, let alone in sports.
Phil, you're a storyteller and a good play-by-play guy has to be a good storyteller, but your focus early on was baseball, basketball, and then you had an opportunity to be the play-by-play guy in the USHL, the Junior Hockey League in St. Louis, a year experience there, and then you saw this opportunity in Danbury, and you reached out to the league office, and they set up an interview for you. So how did that interview go?
It was quick. So sometimes, you know, you go to an interview and it's really fast and it's like, wow, this isn't going well. It was quite the opposite for me. As you mentioned, Rick, I had an opportunity to work with the league office, which was near where I was living at the time. And I flew out to Danbury during the baseball All-Star break. I drove up to the dump. Or the transfer station, which is the more accurate name. And dump, you know, that you call it a dump, and I got it. I mean, no one's ever said this. It wasn't part of the documentary. This was the cleanest dump I've ever been to. I've only been to one. But this is the cleanest one I've ever been to. Basically, as God is my witness, you could eat off the floor in this place. I mean, there were always people around cleaning. You would see where the trucks were coming in and out and leaving garbage, but there wasn't a speck of actual garbage on the floor in this place. So it was immaculate. And the buildings, the office building, building 7, I still remember that, it was even more immaculate. And that is where Jimmy's office went. So I get there, I go up to Jimmy's office and get called in with Jimmy and AJ. And the interview basically just went like this. Jimmy looks me up and down, the Jimmy stare, as was described in the documentary from the Amicholi brothers. And Jimmy says, well, Richard Brosell sent you here. Richard, of course, is a very prominent person in the documentary, the commissioner of the UHL. And I said, yes, Jimmy. By the way, I was told ahead of time, don't call him Mr. Galante. It's Jimmy. And that's okay. What I did. And I said, yes, Jimmy, that's correct. Looks me up and down another few seconds. And the next words out of his mouth, well, Phil, how much do you want to make? That was the question he asked me. He asked me right about salary, right? Job interviews. No one even wants to broach that subject, especially in broadcasting. You're like,
no.
And to be honest, it's like, ooh, how am I getting lowballed here? That's a normal job interview, right? So that's kind of how it works in broadcasting in a lot of other places. But here I threw a number out there thinking I was about to get into some sort of negotiation. Moving on the East Coast, I know it's more expensive. I threw a number out there that was a good number. It wasn't a duffel bag full of cash. If you saw the film, you know what I'm talking about. Nothing like that. There were no duffel bags involved in my hiring. And I give Jimmy the number. Jimmy looks at AJ. AJ looks back at Jimmy, shrugs his shoulders and nods. And the next word out of Jimmy's mouth is, hey, Phil, when can you start? And I was offered the job right on the spot.
Wow.
Jimmy, to my knowledge, he didn't look at my resume. I know for a fact that he didn't actually hear any of my broadcasting work until I called a couple of Trashers games, one on the road in particular. And that's how I got the job. And it was, you know, just amazing from there.
So, but they were both Jimmy and AJ were rather hands-on. He may not have heard your broadcast before you were hired, but certainly heard you after you became the play-by-play broadcast, the only play-by-play broadcaster in Danbury Trashers history. Did they ever offer suggestions or stronger than suggestions? Oh, you might want to change this. Don't be this critical. Do this, say this. Was there any of that hands-on kind of management of your role?
No, in fact, quite the opposite. I remember after our first road game, and it was in Elmira, a game that the Trashers lost, mind you, and it was a complete gong show fight-wise. I mean, there were close to 200 penalty minutes in the first period, much more so than the first game of the season against the Adirondack Frostbite, which is described in the film. And Jimmy brings me into the office. He compliments my broadcasting, which was great to hear. And I said, hadn't you heard my work? And he didn't really quite answer my question. So I felt at that point he hadn't listened to my work. But he was happy with everything. And I've got to say, in fact, during the 2 years that I broadcasted games, I was told to basically be completely honest, call the game as I see it. If the team's not playing well, it's totally fine for me to mention that. If the team's playing great, it's totally fine for me to mention that. Not once in two seasons was I asked to make any sort of adjustment to my broadcast, which it does not surprise me with Jimmy and AJ. The one thing that I noticed in my time there, and they placed a lot. They were very hands-on, but they also gave everyone a lot of responsibility. And this really even branched out to my job as the director of communications and the PR director. Mm-hmm. And anything that I ever wrote in a press release or a news story or whatever, we would run them all through Jimmy. Any press release or something, we'd make sure that he would see it. Never asked me to change a single word in 2 years. You know, I wrote hundreds of press releases during that time. Not a single, nothing out of place. Everything was good to go. And in that, you know, that is something that even to this day is something that you would not honestly find anywhere in sports, because there's always someone that has something to say. and I never had to worry about that at all.
Now, once you're hired, you have probably the world's quickest interview. and hiring process. You get hired, you come on board with the Trashers. What were there, you know, and I understand storytelling in a documentary is meant to pull viewers in certain ways and so forth. So there was a very foreboding tone at points during the documentary, talking about, you know, FBI investigations and covert operations and this, that, and the other, and the mafia connections and all of those kinds of things. But for you in day-to-day life, in the time and in the moment, was any of that even on the radar, or was it just kind of like business as usual in day-to-day life working for the Danbury Trashers? And you could see in the documentary, too, that so practically everyone in that documentary said, Jimmy Galani's a great guy. He's just, you know, the whole family is just, they're great people. So what was the experience like for you?
Well, first off, I echo everyone's comments about Jimmy and AJ and the Galante family. I mean, these were amazing people to work for. Just from day one, they treated us all like family. And really, it's something, again, I had worked several years in minor league baseball before that. I worked with a USHL team, and the baseball experience was good. The USHL experience was quite dysfunctional, a team that lasted only one season for a variety of reasons. I get to Danbury, and it was just wonderful. Here I am. I have a job. I can do the job as I want to do it. I'm able to call a really exciting team that's doing, you know, they're winning hockey games and beating the crap out of their opponents on the ice physically. And it didn't get any more exciting for me from that standpoint. So in that respect, it was great. And then in terms of the day-by-day experience, quite honestly, it really was like working for a normal team. It was the first pro hockey team I ever worked for. But if I compare it back to my days in baseball, it was very similar. The only difference is I was the one person with experience working in sports. All of the other people that worked in our front office either had some part-time work maybe under them. Our ticket manager, she was right out of college. She was fantastic, though, and caught on right away. So I was the person brought on board that had pro sports experience. Everyone else was kind of learning on the fly. But the thing was, everyone worked their butts off and got the job done, which was great. And the stuff with the FBI and the investigations, blah, that kind of stuff, I honestly had no sense of it until there was that FBI raid after the first season, which was prominently in the news. And then, yeah, now you know there's something going on. And you know, but even after that, Jimmy was pretty quick to just come out and say, you know what, it's business as usual. He's going to handle all that stuff and just go on with your job. And that's what we did.
The community of Danbury really embraced this team. The fan reaction, the fan base, they were rabid fans. You sold out quite often. The Section 102 is infamous in the documentary. At this level of hockey, there was. It's kind of unheard of to have a full building, and not only that, but people scalping tickets out front to get in. Talk about the community reaction, the fan reaction, and the energy that they gave the team every night.
Well, you know, we had one of the smaller buildings in the league. It was just over 3,000 seats. We barely hit the league minimum for seating in the league, in the United Hockey League. So from that aspect, selling out happened quite often. We weren't in a very big city. Danbury, and I think it still is, the fifth largest city in the state of Connecticut. And we didn't really market too far outside of Danbury and the couple of surrounding towns. Now, we'd get hockey fans from all over that came in because of word of mouth. And so it didn't take much to sell out the building. And then the demand, especially once the lockout really kind of clenched down and no one was going to have any NHL hockey. They heard about the Trashers, how exciting it was. And you know, there'd be lots of goals and lots of fights. And it really got just everyone amped up. In terms of the local Danbury presence, a big reason why they fell in love with the team was everywhere. One thing, and it was part of my job, was to make sure that players got out in the community. And we did literally hundreds and hundreds of player appearances. Barely a day went by where there weren't, you know, a couple of players signing autographs and meeting fans at some business in the area. And we did that for both seasons. So you were able to get up close and personal with the Danbury Trashers. We did all the school stuff, all the things that you would see from a minor league team. And I think we did it even more successfully in some respects. And because of that, and because of their success on the ice, it was pretty easy to draw good crowds.
Now, just to kind of piggyback onto that, you know, Rick mentioned Section 102 there, which, as he said, featured prominently in the documentary, and just what a base of fans that was, who were there to wreak havoc and cheer and jeer and the whole, you know, A to Z of it. Rick actually stumbled across another interview that you had done where someone had asked if you know, how many of the visiting coaches really tolerated that? And a good portion of our listenership are Flyers fans. And so they might be a little interested to hear if you could just briefly tell the story of the one, particularly, you know, it came out in the documentary that Jimmy and AJ, particularly AJ, you know, really wanted to emulate that the 1970s Broad Street Bullies from Philadelphia. But there was a certain Dave Schultz, who was the interim head coach of the Elmira Jackals, who came to visit and apparently didn't take too kindly.
I never figured Dave the Hammer Schultz to be the sensitive type, but apparently in this case, he was the sensitive type, and he was with Elmira. You know, what's interesting is we even had, and I think before at this point, we'd have scouts come out. And since you mentioned the Broad Street Bullies, I know Bill Barber came out and actually scouted a game. I think he might have been scouting for Tampa Bay at that point. But then a few weeks later, the Elmira Jackals come in, and they had already fired. They had fired their coach. They weren't playing well. So Dave the Hammer Schultz takes over as the interim coach. And one of the traditions that was a mainstay in Danbury, this guy Big Mike brought in a fire engine horn, literally strapped to like a tank of oxygen. And during the media timeouts or any time that there wasn't play, they would tip the horn over, not to get it into the bench, but close enough, and they would just blare this thing. I was about three sections over. I couldn't hear a thing. I can only imagine how bad it sounded in the visiting bench. So Dave the Hammer Schultz is really upset about this. And one of the things that we had in Section 102, and I don't know who mandated this, I believe it was the city of Danbury, there was a police presence between the bench and the fans to make sure there were no fights. I mean, that's how much the Section 102 fans antagonized the visiting players. Here's the dirty little secret. those Danbury cops are all Danbury Trashers fans on top of that.
Oh,
so the biggest
yes.
hockey fans would really vie to get this like extra overtime assignment, because now you get you're getting some extra money. You get free hockey because you get to watch the game and you're right behind the bench. So Dave the Hammer Schultz starts, you know, pleading with whoever the cop was that night, kind of policing the bench from the fans. And it's like, can you get this horn out of the building? And basically the cop just he didn't laugh at him, but he just kind of shrugged his shoulders and said no. And Dave Schultz was really upset about it. Normally most coaches would just stop trying. You couldn't hear a thing. You wouldn't be able to coach your players. You just let it go. And that was just one of the many things that when you would come to Danbury would get some of the players talking about having what was quote unquote the Danbury flu. They didn't really want to play in Danbury, whether it was that, whether it was T-Bone and AJ coming up with schemes to vandalize the opposing locker rooms with, you know, just a few towels or, you know, dirty fish under the, you know, under the ceiling so that they would rot and create a rancid smell, all sorts of stuff like that. You know, not every player necessarily wanted to come out. And if they did, they weren't all too excited about it.
So the picture, both from the documentary and as we're talking today, a gong show. It was craziness in the building. But it shouldn't be forgotten that this was a very good team. And for all of the, you know, the what was said about AJ and 17-year-old kid and his dad buys him a team, he understood what was necessary for an on-ice product, and he had skill guys. He had, yes, he had the physical guys. He had the guys there that were going to market the team. He did a pretty good job putting this all together. So how did a kid, now, you know, he had a love of hockey from an early age, but how did he recruit and put together, assemble such a good team?
In terms of recruiting, I know he spent a lot of time really trying to find that right mix of, you know, tough guys and skilled players. And I think, you know, he kind of looked at it in regards to who are players that would play at this level. So he wasn't, although there were NHL guys that did come and play in Danbury because of the lockout, that wasn't initially what they were looking for. So he was really looking at players that spent time in the UHL or similar leagues, obviously really high numbers of fights and high numbers of penalty minutes. He would kind of cross-reference that with, were these good teams? He wasn't necessarily going after players that were just tough to be tough and their teams were lousy. In fact, three of the tough guys from season one, Amy, you mentioned the Flyers. Well, three of the very toughest guys on the team, not really talked much about during in the documentary, Frank the Animal Bialowis, along with Dave McIsaac and Garrett Burnett. Well, those three were all part of a Calder Cup championship team with the Philadelphia Phantoms.
Yep.
And they all racked up. Burnett was a rookie, I think, only like 20 or 21 at that point. But, you know, the Animal and Dave McIsaac were there all season. McIsaac had a great playoff for these guys, and he put up numbers as well. So they were recruiting players, obviously, from winning teams a little bit later in their careers for the Animal and for Dave McIsaac, and then an up-and-comer like Jarrett Burnett. And, you know, they would look for guys that were part of successful teams. Same thing for the players that could put the puck in the back of the net. So you would dress 10 forwards and 6 defensemen in the UHL at that time. And you'd have, you know, 5 or 6 guys easily that would drop the gloves. And the guys that didn't even drop the gloves often would be the toughest guys on some of the other teams in the league. And then the scoring players were just like elite sniper types. Brent Gretzky, and I know it's Wayne's brother, but he was a sniper at that level. I mean, there was a season, I think he played in Nashville, he had close to 200 points. And there were other guys that were 40, 50 goal scorers in the United Hockey League that he brought in, players like Jim Duhart at the start, who eventually got traded. So he really put that mix together of guys that were successful at that level, knowing that if you were to get the right chemistry together and they would react, then it would translate into success. And it did, because you can't just drop the gloves and really just, you know, beat the crap out of people and have it really resonate and connect with fans if you're not going to win hockey games. So you had to do that too.
Mike Rupp is the one that blows me away that he, during the lockout season, left the NHL to come and play. But fast forwarding to today, the players, the alumni from the Danbury Trashers, and you look where they are today, and Bruce Richardson, the franchise leading scorer, he's head coach in the queue for the Armada. Doug Christensen, top scoring defenseman, the GM and head coach for the Indy Fuel, the ECHL. Mario Larocque, Montreal native. He's in Châteauguay, a AAA midget team he's the head coach of. So that group has branched off, and is there is a legacy to the Danbury Trashers.
There is, and Drew Amicholi, who was in the film quite a bit with his brother Mike, I know Drew runs a I think it's South Shore Kings up in the Boston area. And David Heimovitz runs a team up in Boston, kind of like that, you know, kind of, you know, younger level all the way up through kind of the higher level, or at least like a tier two, tier three juniors. I'm not exactly sure. So, yeah, there are a lot of guys that went into coaching after the Danbury Trashers. I know Nicky Bellotto, who's a Montreal native, has a hockey performance school, and a lot of his players have gone on to at least Division One, if not some of those guys getting drafted. It is interesting to see how, you know, AJ was able to not just recruit talented players, but also pretty smart players as well from a hockey standpoint. Guys with pretty good hockey IQ, those players had to make up for the wildness that took place on the ice. I mean, it wasn't uncommon to begin a game and you're 5 minutes in and the Trashers are killing a two-man penalty for 7-9 minutes. Then they'd go and score a couple of shorthanded goals. Bruce Richardson seemed to score a lot of those shorthanded goals, by the way, for the Danbury Trashers. So that was a pretty common thing that happened. And Mike Rupp, I mean, just it was once he joined the team, I mean, it was just watching really a man among boys. And I know he was only in his early 20s at that point, but to watch that skill.
Yeah.
And there were other NHL players in the league. A few teams had him. In fact, the Motor City Mechanics had a handful of the Detroit Red Wings players on the team. Chris Chelios played for them, and Sean Avery was playing for them.
Oh, boy.
A couple of other guys that escaped my mind. Unfortunately, they wouldn't leave the state. Because, in fact, Jimmy wanted to fly them all in. He wanted to face the full Motor City Mechanics team. So he's like, I'll fly all the NHL guys out here. No one wanted to take the bus. And they refused. They wouldn't come out to play in Danbury. And, you know, to this day, obviously very disappointing. And I think when we played in Motor City that first season, you know, they might have had Brian Smolinski in the lineup. There might have been one or two of their NHL guys, but it definitely wasn't the full group. Chelios didn't play. Sean Avery definitely didn't play. I would have remembered that.
Yes.
And, you know, so like, did they get the Danbury flu? I don't know. I mean, they didn't go anywhere else outside the state, but to this day, it makes you sit back and wonder, why wouldn't they come to Danbury? A free plane ride? I guess if you're an NHL guy and you've been on a charter, maybe flying coach isn't that exciting. I don't know. But it would have been great to see those players come out, because the Trashers really wanted to play that full Motor City Mechanics team. It never did happen. But, you know, Mike Rupp was just amazing. And the Trashers, I mentioned Garrett Burnett, who was an NHL guy. Stephen Pete played with the team for a while, the former Washington Capitals enforcer. So there were a few other NHL guys that kind of, you know, played a little bit because of the lockout. But Michael Rupp was the guy that really had the impact.
So what has it been like? We just have one or two more questions here for you. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, this was, in some ways, as you've described, this was just another chapter in your sports broadcasting career. And in other ways, it was iconic and exceptionally memorable and historic and so forth. What was it like reliving all of this through a Netflix production and kind of getting the crew back together? And did you see a lot of the other people during production, or was, you know, what was it like getting to relive this whole experience?
The whole experience really started late in 2018. We did these interviews in the summer of 2019. So it was 2 years ago when we did the film. And in the end, there's kind of a reunion with a lot of the fans and a few players. Obviously, Jimmy and AJ were part of that. And that was where I got to see a lot of people. Otherwise, we were really kind of isolated in regards to where we interviewed. So I didn't get to see, I saw Jimmy and AJ, but I didn't see, you know, the Amicholi brothers or Brad Wingfield or Rumi Nador during the interviewing process, which I wish I could have. It just didn't work out that way for any of us, really. And it, but it was great to relive it. And yeah, it was definitely, even to this point, all these many years later, still the most unique chapter in my broadcast career. And I went from Danbury to 9 years in the American Hockey League and doing fill-in in the NHL to here in Quinnipiac. And I've been there for several years now in Division I hockey. And regardless of where I go, I mean, there's going to be nothing that I do that honestly is going to be what the Danbury Trashers were for those two seasons. And now it's, you know, as I like to say, I mean, this is up there. This in about 2.5 weeks has become a cult classic, right up there with Slapshot, right up there with Goon, right up there with the Mighty Ducks. I mean, if you're a hockey fan, you're going to talk about this film for years and years. And I really feel that way. Like, it's going nowhere. It's now on Netflix forever. I mean, that's the thing. So, you know, nothing else that I've done is going to get that kind of treatment, at least to the best of my knowledge.
Incredible film. But what wasn't in there? As we know, when you're making a movie or documentary, TV show, things get left on the cutting room floor. And what's your favorite story that wasn't in the documentary that you would have put in the documentary if you had the opportunity?
Oh my God. I mean, there's so much. and no, there really is. I tell people maybe 10% of the hockey was talked about in the film, and they had to condense the two seasons. So, you know, a lot, there wasn't the big narrative in terms of games was really part of that, the Brad Wingfield aspect of it, which is very fascinating to watch and just a great, you know, really just a story of perseverance and in my book, and redemption, you know, for Winger. And if you haven't watched the film, you need to watch it really just for that. But there was so much hockey kind of left on the cutting room floor as a result of that. So you couldn't really get into any of the very deep playoff runs. And for me, the most pivotal, the biggest game that I called in the 2 years that I worked with the Trashers wasn't talked about at all during this film. And it was in the playoffs. It was the first playoff series, and it was against the Adirondack Frostbite, who was the they were the Trashers, you know, biggest division rival. They played each other, you know, almost 20 times a season. And the owners of the Frostbite were Barry Melrose and Steve Levy of ESPN. And there was definitely a fair amount of chatter going back and forth between the two teams. And game two, the Trashers won the first game up in Glens Falls in overtime, and the second game went to triple overtime. And the Trashers did win that game on the road. Jonathan Gagnon picked up his first goal in a Danbury uniform, and it was almost the end of the third overtime. Guys were getting, like, carted off the ice and had to get IV bags during intermissions. I remember Nick Bellotto, poor guy, went down, looked like he got shot. Turned out it was just cramps. But that's what happened. Guys were just gone. They were, you know, you were losing players on both teams left and right. They never stopped selling beer at the Glens Falls Civic Center. Until they ran out. It's close to 1 o'clock in the morning, and there's probably not a sober soul in the house except for the players and the broadcasters, because we were working the game. And so an amazing win. The Trashers take two on the road. They would win that series in five. And I just remember waiting for the bus. I'm outside. Jimmy Galante basically bussed up a whole busload full of fans from Section 102, bought their tickets that they could go there and do their thing on the road. And I just remember when Barry and Steve came out, and just that the looks on their faces just really just, you know, expressionless, just, you know, distraught. No words, you know, from two, you know, obviously Barry Melrose is normally a pretty, you know, outspoken, verbose guy.
Sure.
And the fans from Section 102 are just laying into them. laying into both of them, man. Because they're outside where all the players are coming out, and that's where Levy and Melrose came out. And I and we're a family friendly podcast, right? So I'm not even going to utter some of the things that were just, you know, lace in the direction of those two guys. And even as I was packing up, I remember the fans, the Frostbite fans were really livid. I had fans like yelling up at me. The way the concourse was set up, you could like basically look up and see me on the platform where I was broadcasting from. So some of these fans were giving it to me. I'm like, I'm just calling the game. Yeah. I have nothing to do with what happened on the ice. You want to yell at me? So I'm laughing. I think it's hysterical, but they're giving me grief. The Trasher fans are giving Barry and Steve grief. So it was great. I mean, that's how wonderful that rivalry was. I don't think there's really any footage of the full game that exists. The audio's out there somewhere. I think I have it, but that would have been the one thing I wish we could have told. It just, there wasn't room or time for it.
Absolutely. Have you, whether it was before the production or even since the production has happened, were you still in touch with Jimmy and AJ and T-Bone and all the guys from the Trashers, or select members of the Trashers, or have you now gotten back in touch with them?
A lot of the players I stayed in touch with because of, you know, Facebook, social media, things along those lines. So a lot of the players and I are connected on Facebook and have been for many years. In terms of with Jimmy and AJ, yeah, I can tell you starting, and I want to say it was 2000, it was before we even got involved in the Netflix documentary. AJ has his boxing gym, mm-hmm. and every summer, hasn't for the last couple of years because of COVID, put together a amateur show called The Summer Sizzler. And he represents, he has a lot of amateur boxers that fight. And there's a really good amateur following in the state for, you know, Connecticut USA boxing. And he brought me back to do the ring announcing. So for the last several years, whenever he has one of these shows, I come in and do the ring announcing. And, you know, I've never done ring announcing before, but it's fun. And I really enjoy doing it. And from there, you know, we reconnected, and then more so during the Trashers film. So, mm-hmm. you know, I do talk to AJ, whether it's, you know, in person or, you know, more likely texting, stuff like that, messaging back and forth, you know, quite frequently, much more so now that the film has come out and we had all this stuff kind of coming up to the film. So it's great. I mean, I live only about half an hour away, you know, from Danbury. I'm pretty close. So it's easy for me to get in the area and see people.
That's wonderful. Well, mm-hmm. as you did allude to, your broadcasting career is still flourishing. You're the play-by-play guy for Quinnipiac men's and women's teams. Mm-hmm. Are you also currently on the call for anyone else?
Ever since year one, I've called the Connecticut Whale in the NWHL, which is now the PHF. They just rebranded last week. And I called those games since season one. I did the Isabel Cup Finals for a few years, the first 3 years of the Isabel Cup Finals. Last year, they were in a bubble, so I didn't get to work that. Hopefully, I get to return this season. But yeah, most of the time I'm spending time with Quinnipiac men's and women's hockey, all their home games on ESPN+. And yeah, you know, it's about 40 games a season. I work outside broadcasting as well in a normal kind of like 9-to-5 type of job in research. And I've done that for many, many years. So it's a really good mix of things that keeps me kind of on my toes. But, you know, before going to Quinnipiac, I was in the American Hockey League for 9 years. With the Bridgeport Sound Tigers. I went right from Danbury to the American Hockey League, which was great in the state, and you know, got to live out kind of like that cup of coffee broadcasting some NHL games as well. So that was always great. And you know, it's funny because the first regular season NHL game I did, you know, John Tavares scored 5 points, and nice. Ryan Strome had his first NHL goal in that game. And you know, if you still ask me what was the you know, most exciting game I ever called, I still tell you triple overtime Trashers and Frostbite in 2005. even though like the NHL's right up there, I mean, that's how exciting it was for me to be in Danbury. So I've gotten to do a lot. I feel very fortunate and blessed. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with my time in the Trashers, because without that, I wouldn't have had the exposure to continue on and go right to the American Hockey League and progress in my career.
So broadcasting now, the Quinnipiac Bobcats, NCAA hockey, do you feel that there's something missing from your broadcast? I mean, you go from Danbury where, you know, 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 fights a night, and now to a league that where there isn't fighting anymore. Do you miss calling and play-by-play guys call fights. Do you miss that?
Well, you know, it's just not really part of hockey anymore. If you think about it, you don't see very many fights per game. I remember when I first went to Bridgeport, and they weren't the trashers by any stretch of the imagination. But if you go back and look through those years, they always had really good tough guys. I mean, some of the bigger tough guys in the AHL played, whether it's a Trevor Gillies or, you know, Brett Gallant came through, and we'd see, you know, guys like Mitch Fritz played in Bridgeport, Jeremy Yablonsky. I mean, these are guys, if you're fight fans, are pretty big names in that respect. Kip Brennan spent a year with Bridgeport, a guy that would have fit really well on the Danbury Trashers in terms of antics and getting suspended. But over time, even by my last year in 2014, 2015, there wasn't very many fights. And I know even at that level now, there's not much. Obviously, college hockey, you don't really see the fighting, but it's different. And the one thing I really do love about broadcasting in college hockey, men's or women's college hockey, is that it's about winning. Not to say that players in the American Hockey League don't want to win. They certainly do, but it's much more so about development and getting to the next level and becoming a full-time NHL player. And then winning is important there. But with college hockey, that's it. I mean, you've got to win, because otherwise, what's the point? You know, a lot of these guys do get to play some pro, and Quinnipiac is a major. They're always in the top 10, top 12 in the country. So for men's hockey, and women, they're usually in the top 10 or just outside it. So they're both very well-regarded hockey programs. ECAC hockey is great to watch, but it is about winning and losing. And that's something that in the last few years of working in the American Hockey League, it wasn't so much about that with the Bridgeport Sound Tigers. It was more about player development. So that's the one thing I really enjoy much more about broadcasting in college hockey, because there's fewer games. Each game means so much more, and they really kind of lay it all out there.
Well, his name is Phil Jubileo. He, of course, as you just heard, he's the current play-by-play broadcaster for the Quinnipiac D1 men's and women's hockey teams, but was the former Danbury Trashers broadcaster in the UHL, and can be seen on the new Netflix docuseries, Untold Crime and Penalties. Phil, we can't thank you enough for coming. I think we could probably talk for an entire afternoon about the stories that you undoubtedly have to tell, but we appreciate you taking a bit of time to share your side of your Danbury Trashers experience with our listeners.
Well, Amy, Rick, thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.
Rick, I think the first thing, before we even talk about how fantastic that interview with Phil was, first and foremost, if you have not gone to Netflix and watched Untold Crime and Penalties, you've got to do it. If you like hockey, we are not kidding you about this. If you're a hockey fan at all, you are going to be shocked. You're going to laugh. You're going to be surprised. You're going to be amazed. And you're going to be talking about it for weeks, right? I mean, they just have to go watch this documentary.
This is something you're going to talk about with your hockey friends. I admit, I was a little skeptical. I thought I would be underwhelmed when I watched it. And it's an incredible story. Just incredible. And once you've had a chance to watch it, then, and once you've had a chance to listen to the interview with Phil, then send your comments, and we're happy to hear from you about it.
Absolutely. And thank you again to Phil Jubileo for joining us. Just one of the cast of characters who was interviewed and featured in that documentary on Netflix. Phil really bringing a really unique perspective. Of course, Jimmy and AJ played a big part. They're central characters, but being the voice of the team is on any given day in professional sports is a unique perspective and a unique position to hold. But with a franchise like the Danbury Trashers, man, I think we could have talked forever with Phil about all the stories he has to tell. So we look.
And Phil had a couple of hats, both the play-by-play broadcaster, right, as well as the media relations person. So he was dealing with a lot and involved in every part of the hockey story here, and as you said, a really unique perspective.
Absolutely. So thank you very much to Phil. We look forward to having you back on the show again sometime soon. One thing we want to mention, if you happen to miss last week's episode, it was one of our bi-weekly AHL Hot Stove weeks featuring Patrick Williams, who joined Rick and I on the show in the second half of the show last week for our latest AHL Hot Stove topic. And it was the viability of this AHL season. You know, we talked, we've talked about how this upcoming hockey season, even though everything is, as far as the schedules look and so forth, everything is kind of moving along as it should be, but there is still this pandemic looming over everything, and there's a lot of things hanging kind of up in the air and loose ends still to be tied and so forth that it makes this season upcoming really unpredictable. If you missed that, you do not want to miss it. So go back, just head over to thepresszone.fm and you can check, look for last week's episode with Patrick Williams. And Rick, you know, it's interesting. We're already even seeing, you know, we're a week out from that interview and we're already seeing some of those effects happening. We've had already this week two instances. We talked last week in that segment how there was a San Jose Sharks associate coach who already had to step down from his duties because due to medical reasons, he's not able to be vaccinated. And so due to NHL protocol, would not be able to fulfill his duties. And now this week we've had two more coaches in one league or another who've had to step away due to vaccination status. And it's certainly we're starting to see how this season is going to be different.
Yeah, it's you really feel for the people that are making these are good people. Sylvain Lefebvre, we know, I have respect for him. He's a very good coach, a very good man, and we're uncomfortable with what we see on social media and the kind of criticism that falls along more political lines and doesn't necessarily, I guess, understand that people can follow the science and make a personal choice. I feel for the coaches that are being put in a very difficult position and have to make a difficult decision admire and respect them for what they've done.
Absolutely. You know, it's for Sylvain Lefebvre, he was had been hired earlier this summer as one of Brad Larson's assistant coaches for the Columbus Blue Jackets, meaning he was getting an opportunity to be behind the bench at the NHL level and does not plan to be vaccinated. And so it seems that Columbus has parted ways with him and promoted someone from their AHL affiliate to replace him since it's pretty late in the game. And then just today, Colorado Avalanche announced that a similar situation with one of their assistant coaches at the AHL level, the Colorado Eagles. And so they've had to promote their ECHL head coach to replace him. And yes, that's just it, Rick. I mean, people do have a choice to make. No one knows the reasonings why someone may or may not choose to receive the vaccine. They may not be able to for some reason. It may just be personal choice. There's all sorts of contingent factors that we won't know because those are personal things. It has to be a hard decision to make. And especially when your job is at stake. I think this is just the tip of the iceberg. I think we're going to see a lot more of this unfold over the next couple of weeks, and certainly into the first few months of the season. Things are not going to be predictable, it's a shame that we're 18 months into this and we're still going through things that are unprecedented, and I think that's going to continue, unfortunately. We did mention there at the top of the segment, welcoming our three newest recruits to the Rocket Sports team. And we also mentioned that time is still available for you to apply if you are interested in joining the team for this upcoming season. Whether you are a fan of the Habs, whether you're a fan of the Flyers, whether you're a fan of a completely different hockey organization, if you just want to get your feet wet in sports media and hockey media, if you really enjoy the AHL, if you enjoy podcasts and have experience with audio production or producing and so forth, lots of different opportunities. Rick, the best way, what's the best way for people, if they still are interested in putting in an application to join the team, what's the best way for them to do that?
You'll notice on our AHLReport.com site, there is a Join Our Team tab. For the Habs fans in our audience, if you go to allhabs.net, there is a Join Our Team tab on the allhabs.net site. Mm-hmm. So it asks a few basic questions and why you want to join our team and how you can help us. And once you submit that, we'll get back to you right away. And you could be part of our Rocket Sports team.
Absolutely. We'd love to welcome you to the fold, to the family, as we like to say. We're very excited about our new team members, and we would love to work with you as well. With that, Rick, it's been a whirlwind already. It's a busy show. We are going to let you all get back to what's left of the week this week. Rookie camps are starting. It's an exciting time. Be sure you're locked on to AHLReport.com. Rick, want to thank you for another great episode.
And you too.
And we look forward to meeting you right back here again next Tuesday, where we will be on the precipice of actual NHL training camps beginning, and then the real fun begins. So don't go anywhere. We will see you back here next Tuesday for another great episode of The Press Zone right here on Rocket Sports Radio.
Click subscribe to never miss an episode of The Press Zone on Rocket Sports Radio. Visit AHLReport.com for the latest news on hockey prospects.